We're happy to welcome back to the show Congressman Mike Thompson, who is joining us via telephone back in D.C. and getting back to work. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Barry. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Let's get right into it.
Okay.
The blue wave, a new Congress, new opportunities in the House, and really right at the top of the agenda, I want to ask about your efforts on universal background checks and starting to, you know, peck away at this gun problem we have. What can you say about that right now?
Well, as you know, I've been leading the effort on expanding background checks for people who want to buy firearms for ever since Sandy Hook elementary school tragedy. And we could not get a hearing on that legislation nor a vote on that legislation when the Republicans were in charge. So 6 years of doing nothing. I can tell you with certainty that won't be the case now. We will expand the background check laws, federal laws regarding background checks, to ensure that we're doing everything possible to make sure that people who are dangerously mentally ill or people who are criminals aren't able to get guns easily. So that's going to be one of the first things we do on the gun violence prevention front.
Mm-hmm. And you feel that can move forward?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We'll have overwhelming support from that. And it'll be bipartisan support. As a matter of fact, I have a meeting, I think today, either today or tomorrow, with a group of the Republican House members who were the co-author of my previous background check bills, and they want to work with this. And this is a real issue in the campaigns across the country. It was a top concern for 60% of all voters, Democrats, Republicans, and folks who declined to state a party preference. And it really played a role in the elections, the midterm elections. And if you look at the successes that people who were proponents of gun violence prevention enjoyed, they ran all over those who were opposed to doing background checks. Mm.
You used a word there a moment ago I'm not familiar with. I think it was bipartisan.
Yeah.
Do you think with the results in the House being what they were, and in fact results all across the country, that there will be some Republicans who have aligned themselves with the president for a while, feeling like that protected them, would get them reelected, discovering something different now, and that there is a new possibility for bipartisanship again?
Well, I certainly hope so. And you know my background. You know that I've had pretty good success in passing legislation or getting funding such as the fire emergency funding by working across party lines. And I think that we need to do a lot more of that. I've always felt that way. I think there's going to be a continued effort to do it on the part of most of us. And I think you're going to see more folks on the other side of the aisle being willing to come over. You know, they got the message loud and clear. You know, you referenced the blue wave. We won seats in this last election. We didn't think we would win seats that, because the protection against, the Republican protection against the blue wave were all of these districts that were redistricted, or the jurisdictional lines were drawn in such a way that a Democrat could never pose a threat to an incumbent Republican in some of these states. And as you know, that didn't hold 100%. That's the only reason that infrastructure that they built in through gerrymandering was the only reason that the blue wave wasn't bigger than it was. So I think people realize that, and I suspect they're going to want to work together on issues that are important to not only their district but to our country.
Mm-hmm. It's a little bit underreported by comparison to the House and Senate, but at the state level, the governorships and the changes in state legislatures
absolutely
is going to make a difference over time because of redistricting, right?
You're absolutely correct, and we're fast approaching the next census, and so we're going to have Democratic governors and Democratic majorities in state houses that will that are more apt to be able to deviate from that partisan line drawing.
Mm-hmm. So, does Nancy Pelosi get elected majority speaker of the House?
If I were a betting person, that's who I would bet on.
Mm-hmm. Will it be a significant challenge? Because I keep hearing different things, and people step up, and then they kind of fade.
Well, best I can tell, you know, there's a small group of folks. You've got two groups of folks that that factor into this. One, new members who ran promising they wouldn't vote for her for speaker, and I don't know how many those are. And then you've got a group of incumbents, and that's about 12 people, I think, who for whatever reason don't like Nancy Pelosi and have been leading this effort to make sure she's not speaker. Leading up to the midterm, their whole story was Democrats cannot win the majority if Nancy Pelosi is a Democratic leader. Well, she proved them wrong, as many of us said would happen. So I'm not certain what their rub with her is, other than they feel that the leadership that's in place is holding them back from being able to ascend into more influential positions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just don't think that's a reason. I don't think people rally behind somebody because that somebody wants a better job for themselves. The new members who promise not to vote for her, I suspect they can't vote for her. But the way the process works is Democrats choose their own leader. We do that in a closed caucus meeting. And I think these folks should go in and make their best case. They should argue for whom it is they think should be speaker. We should have that vote, and that's what should determine who our leader is. I don't think you let the other party choose your leader, and I don't think you allow stupidity within our party to influence the outcome of that race.
Mm-hmm.
But as it is right now, I think most people understand that she is the most effective speaker that any of us have ever seen, and that she's going to be the most effective person going forward.
We're talking with Congressman Mike Thompson, who, of course, was recently reelected for another term representing us in Washington. Let's talk about the budget. This is another area where you have been consistent over the years, trying to keep a focus on how much of our resources go to debt. And now, I believe, if I have my numbers right, we see that the deficit increased by 17% in 1 year as a result of actions under the current presidential administration. Is there anything now with the Democratic majority in the House that can start to stem that hemorrhage of money that's going on?
Well, as you remember, I was the person who, the last time Democrats took control of the House, I was the person that pushed for the rule change to put PAYGO in place. And what that's shorthand for, if you want to pass a bill, you've got to designate how it's going to be paid for. So you don't borrow money to pay for some program or some bill that you want to pass. As soon as the Democrats lost the majority, if you recall, the new Republican majority rescinded half of that rule, and that was the half that went with tax cuts. So, in other words, under their rule, if you wanted to pass a bill for a program that would deal with, you know, you name it, the opioid problems, the flooding, anything like that, you had to pay for it. But if you wanted to just cut taxes, you didn't have to pay for that. You could add that right to the national debt. And we saw that with this tax bill that they snuck through and without any hearings, without any public testimony.
Mm-hmm.
They added $2.3 trillion to our national debt. And then if that wasn't offensive enough, they came back the next week and said, now the debt's so high, we're going to have to cut Social Security and Medicare in order to get the finances in line. And I don't think that is an appropriate response, and I don't think it's fair to the American people who've been paying into their Social Security retirement fund for their entire working life. We need to have fiscal constraints to make sure that we don't bust the bank and that we don't try and balance our debt and our deficit on the backs of the people who can least afford to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. Just reading yesterday about the tax cuts and some stats, and you know this better than I, but about half perhaps of that additional revenue to corporations has gone into stock buybacks and dividends, just as had been predicted.
Yep, that's what everybody said. Well, not everybody, but that's what that's what we said during the bill. And as I say, there were no hearings on it. It was the first time in almost 30 years that we did a major tax bill, and we did it under the Republican leadership without having one single hearing. We didn't hear from one single expert witness. It was written, rewritten, and then rewritten again in the proverbial back room without any public eyes on this. And then it was jammed through, as we all saw. And it was said at the time that this wasn't going to have traction. It penalized California badly on the state and local tax deduction, on the mortgage interest deduction, and we've seen the fruits of their work, where Democrats have won all of these Southern California, Orange County congressional districts. Mm-hmm. And this just didn't work for them. And if you recall, Paul Ryan was saying at the time that once the American people see this tax cut, you know, it's going to be a red wave. The president said that. We're going to have a red wave because this tax cut is so good. Well, there was no red wave, and there was no traction from a tax bill that benefited the richest people in the country and corporations. And as you point out, who turned around and used that money to do stock buybacks.
Yeah. And speaking of the changes in California, in the delegation, there's some familiar faces you won't be seeing in the halls of Congress any longer. Darrell Issa, of course, was retiring, but Dana Rohrabacher, I'm sure you're going to miss him.
I think we get to. Not only we're going to miss him and his sidekick.
Exactly. What's the buzz from your perspective on that, to see these forever red districts in Southern California that have flipped now, and the count continues and it keeps getting better for the Democrats every passing day?
Well, I'm impressed by the quality of the new people coming in. I supported some of those candidates down in Southern California, down in Orange County. I went down myself and walked some precincts, held some rallies for folks. There were a tremendous number of people from our district who had gone down to these other districts to work, and an even bigger number who stayed home in our district and made phone calls and wrote postcards to voters in that area. And I'm here to tell you, they picked and stood behind some great candidates. It is unbelievable for me to see the quality of the new people coming in, people who have been tremendously successful in whatever they were doing before, either NGO work, charitable work, government service, the business sector, the military, the intelligence community, entrepreneurs, and this last presidential election really fired them up. These are folks who left successful careers or put successful careers on hold because they said, I want to get involved. I want to protect my country against what they said, what they saw was just unacceptable behavior.
So we haven't heard much about the migrant caravan since last Tuesday. The topic's mysteriously disappeared from prominence. But we have thousands and thousands of troops that have now been deployed down there, and they'll get to spend Thanksgiving with no electricity and no running water and so forth away from their families. What's the outlook for that? Are we into a new, armed border guard scenario with troop deployments that will become permanent?
Well, you forgot about the tremendous cost to taxpayers I think the number I saw was $250 million to put on that charade. And everybody knew that it was a charade. You know, this quote-unquote caravan of folks, you know, they were weeks, if not months, away from the United States border. And to do that was just more political theater on the part of this president to fire up his base. Well, that effort costs us $250 million, as you point out, sends our troops down to an area where they're really not needed, to be away from their family, and away from their family during the holiday season. And these are troops that have been fighting overseas for years. And when they're home, you know, we should let them have time with their family, not send them out on some, you know, wild goose chase. Mm. And it was just it was just a stunt.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody knows that our immigration system is broken. It needs to be fixed. And you don't fix it by doing nonsensical political stunts like this. You fix it by passing legislation that will do what all of us know needs to be done. The Senate, they did bipartisan immigration reform, comprehensive bipartisan immigration reform. It came over to the House, and you remember what happened. It languished here until the very last days before the election, when they cooked up the idea that they were going to bring three bills out to the floor on immigration. One was going to be the bipartisan bill from the Senate. One was going to, and the other two were various iterations drawn up by the House Republicans with no or little input from Democrats. And then they, at the last minute, they jettisoned the commitment to bring up the Senate bill, and they brought up two bills that were unacceptable to both Democrats and Republicans. So you've talked about bipartisanship. Well, we saw it there on those immigration bills, because an overwhelming majority of both D's and R's voted to reject that. So we need to get back to the table, and that's really, it's really a shame, because that's where a president can use the bully pulpit to influence public policy. And this president has not done that.
Oh, yeah.
But it's incumbent, I believe, on the members of Congress in both houses to sit down, figure out what we can do. We immediately need to fix this DACA problem, where the president's executive order puts all of these great DACA recipients, our friends, our neighbors, our classmates, the kids that went to school and church with our kids, puts them in jeopardy of being rounded up and sent to a country that they don't even know. And there's a statistic, Barry, that I want to share with you, and I think you'll find it pretty convincing. California alone has a teacher shortage, K through 12 teacher shortage in our schools, of 7,000 teachers. Right now, today, there are 5,000 California school teachers who are DACA recipients.
Wow.
So if this president got his way, our school teacher shortage in California would be exacerbated by 5,000.
Hmm. That, I did not know that. That's a fascinating fact. Really interesting. I have so many other things we could talk about, but I've run out of time. Congressman Mike Thompson, I hope to get back with you soon. We can cover some other territory.
Call me again. I love being on your show.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, Barry. Thanks so much.
7:29, time for a break. News coming next at the bottom of the hour.
If you're not driving the new Sprinter Worker from Mercedes-Benz, your van just isn't cutting it. The Sprinter Worker takes payload up.